तत्सवितुर्वरेण्यं भर्गो देवस्य धीमहि धियो यो न प्रचोदयात्। ॐ मे वी मेडिटेट ऑन दैट सुप्रीम बीइंग हु ड्वेल्स इन द हार्ट्स ऑफ ऑल, इज द सोर्स एंड सस्टेनेंस ऑफ दिस यूनिवर्स। In Him we live, move, and have our being. May He illumine our hearts, and may He guide us in every way. Om Shanti, Shanti, Shanti. Peace, peace, peace. We began the study of Viveka Chudamani, Crest Jewel of Discrimination, by the great philosopher Shankara. In this treatise, you really find, in summary, in substance, the whole of not only non-dualistic philosophy, but what is known as Jnana Yoga, or the path of knowledge, the path of discrimination. Right action helps to purify the heart, but it does not give us direct perception of the reality. The reality is attained through discrimination, but not in the smallest degree by 10 million acts. Now here he doesn't condemn action, but he points out that selfless actions purify the heart. Now it is rather technically speaking, I think he is right, but it is too technically speaking, too much. Because if it does purify the heart, immediately there is the knowledge of Brahman, knowledge of God. So there is no difference actually, but he tries to give greater emphasis upon discrimination and meditation. But he cannot deny that activity is a great help to attain the knowledge of Brahman. Of course, he says not millions of acts would give you knowledge of Brahman. True enough. But acts in the right spirit, as it is taught in the Gita, and as you find Swamiji, Swami Vivekananda, he emphasized upon that very much. Karma Yoga, that is not action only, but through action you must learn to unite your thoughts with God. Mere acts do not help. Everybody is active, but activity does not lead to Brahman. But the right action in the right spirit, with the right attitude, gives you purity of heart. That Shankara also has to admit. Now, if there is purity of heart, blessed are the pure in heart, for they shall see God. So there is the knowledge of Brahman immediately shining in the heart. Then you see, Karma Yoga, through action, you unite yourself with God in what way? Every act is an offering of worship. Swamiji said, work is worship. But do not do just work. Work has to be done with the spirit that it is worship. You see, a person meditating, he is worshipping God, or another worshipping God with flowers, and another worshipping God by tending to a plant. But it has to be with that spirit that here is the presence of God, I am worshipping Him. And even to see see Brahman in the action itself, in the act itself. In the process of action you have to see Brahman. In other words, you have to besmear your eyes with the color of Brahman. I hope I am trying to explain something. I hope I have expressed it. In other words, as you take a green or yellow glass, if you put, you see everything yellow or green. So you have to put the glass of Brahman, as it were, the eye of spirit, and learn to see Brahman everywhere, in every action, in every thought. You see, language, for instance, in words, every word, every letter in the alphabet is an expression of Brahman. And so, that kind of action leads you directly to Brahman. But technically speaking, again, Shankara is right, because when that knowledge arises, when the purity part arises, action falls away. You can't act anymore for that moment. You go into samadhi. Who is there to act? So technically speaking, he is right. But then again, there is no discrimination there also. No meditation there also. You see, discrimination means there is a one who discriminates. And discriminates between the reality which is Brahman and that which is unreal. Everything else is unreal. Brahman alone is real. This is the discrimination. And you have to live that. Think that all the time. You know, this reminds me, when I was in the Himalayas at Mayavati, there came two holy men. And they were both brother disciples. They are disciples of the same guru. And first came a man who all the time he would discriminate and he would argue with us. Through argument, of course, he didn't want to prove that he is right and I am wrong. Nothing like that. But his discussion was to bring out topics of Brahman, topics of God, all the time. Every moment, he would be discriminating, he would be talking and discussing. Then he goes away. Then his brother disciple comes, and he would be singing and chanting the name of God, full of devotion. So it was very interesting. And both were wonderful people. Of course, these I am telling, these are spiritual aspirants, but I have seen those who have already attained the highest illumination. They are different types. So right action helps to purify the heart, but it does not give us direct perception of the reality. The reality is attained through discrimination, but not in the smallest degree by 10 million acts. Now discrimination, as I already pointed out, is to discriminate between Brahman, the reality, and that which is unreal. And as you discriminate that, you realize that Brahman is the treasure of your heart. And so your mind, your heart, will always be in Brahman. You know, this is a very hard path. The path of action and path of devotion becomes their natural path. It leads you ultimately to that knowledge of Brahman. But this again is also wonderful if you can follow, if you can practice. Correct discernment shows us the true nature of a rope and removes the painful fear caused by our deluded belief that it is a large snake. You see, this is the famous illustration that Shankara has always used. There is a rope. But have correct discrimination and see that the rope is not the large snake that you are afraid of. But you see, there is to be an experience. But there is a saying, jan sadhan tan siddhi. The method and the means also is the end. What the end is, you make that a means. And that is the ideal that Shankara holds forth. The end is union with Brahman, to see Brahman and nothing else, to realize Brahman. Now again, in order that you can reach that end, to realize that Brahman, you begin to see Brahman, to think of Brahman, every moment of your life. Then the vision opens up. Now, of course, you may say, this is a sort of self-hypnosis. And meditation often is considered by the ignorant as self-hypnosis. But here is the difference between self-hypnosis and meditation. You see, you hypnotize yourself and then you begin to see what you have been thinking. But in this case, if you think of Brahman, think of God, then what you are thinking and the way you are thinking, when the experience comes, it is not that. Something completely different. You could not have conceived that. To give you a simple illustration, for instance, light is the symbol of Brahman. Now, you may think of light, you may consider light as light, and continue to think of light as Brahman. But when the light of Brahman you experience, it is not any light that you could have conceived or thought of. So there lies the difference. Certain knowledge of the reality is gained only through meditation upon right teaching, and not by sacred ablutions or almsgiving or by the practice of hundreds of breathing exercises. You know, people have the idea that if he practices this kind of ceremony or that kind of breathing exercise, then God will become visible. But no. Right kind of meditation. What is that right kind of meditation? Here you see, Shankara has to admit, and he will admit later, he will find. Right kind of meditation is meditation with love. Otherwise, meditation is not possible. You see, love and meditation go together. Without that love, dry meditation leads you nowhere. And, well, you cannot practice dry meditation long. You get tired. But through the practice of that kind of dry meditation, love grows in your heart. Then meditation becomes proper, becomes right. Take for instance, when you love something, when you love somebody, it is no hardship to think of that. In fact, you find great pleasure, great joy in thinking of that. That is the nature of love. Now, as you continue to think of Brahman, as you continue to think of God, it is dry in the beginning. You don't have the interest. You have to create that interest. And how is that interest created? As love. A little love even grows in your heart. And this becomes intensified. And so that is what he also means. Certain knowledge of the reality is gained only through meditation upon right teaching, and not by sacred ablutions or almsgiving or by the practice of hundreds of breathing exercises. Of course, again, these sacred ablutions of charity or almsgiving, all these are great helps to grow that love for God. These are not the direct methods or means. Success in attaining the goal depends chiefly upon the qualifications of the seeker. Suitable time, place, and other such circumstances are aids to its attainment. Now, you see, oftentimes this question arises, how long does it take? Do we have to have many lives, or can we attain in this life? And if we want to attain in this life, how many years should it take? These questions naturally arise. And the answer is given this way. It depends chiefly upon the qualifications of the seeker. In other words, where you stand at the present moment. If you have too much strong tendencies for worldliness, it takes time to overcome those tendencies. Then also, it depends upon how much struggle you are making. If it is intense, it's quicker. If it is middling, it takes longer. If it is just ordinary, it takes longest. So it all depends upon your qualifications and your struggle, intensity of struggle. But again, here, remember this one thing. Oftentimes, we have done that also. When you are going to begin your spiritual life, you are enthusiastic, and then you begin to do too much, and then there comes a reaction. And so, we have been taught that intensify your struggle gradually. Do not try to do all at once. You know, I have known people who think that they will meditate for 6 hours or 10 hours or 15 hours to begin with. And they sit and sit and sit, though they ache all over the body. But what they are doing, God knows. And so they think they will find God. And then after 3 days, they give up everything. So it has to be slow, gradual. Then, of course, there has to be suitable time, place, environment. You see, all these are important aids. Therefore, let him who know the Atman, which is the reality, practice discrimination. But first he must approach a teacher who is a perfect knower of Brahman, and whose compassion is as vast as the ocean itself. In other words, you cannot practice any spiritual discipline without learning from a teacher, from a guru, who is a knower of Brahman, and whose compassion, you see, he does not teach you for anything else, but because his heart melts in love and compassion for people. You see, that is one characteristic of a holy man. You see, people generally would say, oh, this person is bad, that person is bad. They see the bad qualities of people. And the holy man doesn't see those, knows those qualities are there, but he is there to help. You know, this reminds me. One time, somebody complained to my master, Maharaj Swami Brahmananda. Why is it that he has all these boys who are no good around him? You see, some of those boys who just could not live in the monastery, Sri Maharaj would have them with him. And then Maharaj did answer this. If you are good people, you don't need me. These are the people that need me. And you consider the lives of great teachers and all holy men. Did they ever condemn anybody? No. It is just, you know, for instance, holier than thou people always condemn. But no matter how wicked, how fallen you are, holy men, do not drive them away. Their heart goes in love, compassion and sympathy for all who are weak. That is the nature of all holy people. And that is the test. You take the life of Christ or Ramakrishna or the disciples of Sri Ramakrishna that we have seen. So different, so wonderful. Did not drive away anybody. And my master, you know, whenever somebody would do something very bad, very wrong, he'd say, come and live with me. A man should be intelligent and learned, with great powers of comprehension, and able to overcome doubts by the exercise of his reason. One who has these qualifications is fitted for knowledge of the Atman. Now, of course, later again, in this chapter, is brought out all the necessary qualifications in detail. Here it says, a man should be intelligent and learned. You know, there's a saying, I can't exactly remember the words. A holy man, a fool, if he becomes a holy man, the holy man can lose his holiness, but would never lose his foolishness. There is some saying like that. And so they say, give me an intelligent person. And one disciple of Sri Ramakrishna, Swami Turiyananda, said, I even get enemies who are intelligent people, not foolish. A man should be intelligent and learned, with great powers of comprehension, and able to overcome doubts by the exercise of his reason. One who has these qualifications is fitted for knowledge of the Atman. He alone may be considered qualified to seek Brahman who has discrimination. What does that mean? He knows Brahman as the one reality. And he is earnest to realize that Brahman. So here he points out, he alone may be considered qualified to seek Brahman who has discrimination, whose mind is turned away from all enjoyments, who possesses tranquility and the kindred virtues, and who feels a longing for liberation. Well, these are wonderful truths, but here is the point. Where do you find to begin with such people? Very few. But, you know, one time, as we shall consider the different qualifications, and also here in short is given the different qualifications. We asked a disciple of Sri Ramakrishna, he was teaching us the Brahma Sutras, aphorisms and Vedanta with the commentaries of Shankara, and Shankara brings out again these very qualifications to begin with. And we ask the question, but who is qualified then? Nobody, to begin with. Only a knower of Brahman is then qualified, none else. And his answer was this, that you struggle towards these qualifications. And the moment you attain these qualifications, you become a knower of Brahman. So, do not be discouraged as you hear of these qualifications. But we must struggle to attain these qualifications. He alone may be considered qualified to seek Brahman, who has discrimination, whose mind is turned away from all enjoyments, who possesses tranquility and the kindred virtues, and who feels a longing for liberation. But all these come to you with that great longing. When that longing comes to you, then you get all these qualifications and you have the attainment of Brahman. In this connection, the sages have spoken of four qualifications for attainment. When these are present, devotion to the reality will become complete. You see here, devotion to the reality will become complete. The path, the follower on the path of knowledge also has to have great devotion to the ideal. Knowledge, path of knowledge does not mean dry knowledge, dry discrimination and dry meditation. It means great devotion and great love for the reality, for Brahman. And of course, these four I shall consider again in my next. I have many times explained to you, of course, the discrimination between the eternal and non-eternal. Let me read out to you. First is mentioned discrimination between the eternal and non-eternal. Next comes renunciation of the enjoyment of the fruits of action here and hereafter. Then come the six treasures of virtue, beginning with tranquility. And last, certainly, is longing for liberation. This will be discussed more in detail gradually. May I invite questions?
The oral questions from the audience are being revoiced due to their being off mic during the original recording. Swami, isn't it true that you couldn't attain samadhi unless you sit down and meditate, no matter how much action you do?
That's right. That's what I said also. That technically, Shankara is right. But in the purity of heart, and then your heart, your mind is completely absorbed in Brahman, you see. Because your mind is bound to be absorbed in Brahman when that purity comes, then of course you see it. Or if you stand, you go into samadhi, somebody has to hold you. Or you may be digging the root of a tree, you may go into samadhi and then can fall down. It's all right.
Wasn't Socrates supposed to have gone into samadhi walking with a disciple?
I don't know exactly, but I believe he did. He was a great soul.
How does Vedanta define emotions?
It doesn't need any definition. Does it? How can I define it?
I can.
You just get the emotion, that's all.
Is it ego?
Oh no, why should it have to be ego? You can have emotion for God.
Is it the play of the gunas?
Yes, of course, as long as we are in the realms of relativity and emotion is within the realm of relativity, yes, it is the play of the gunas. And that emotion may be sattvic or rajasic or tamasic. No, I don't think it can be tamasic. It has to be either rajasic or sattvic. No Well, there are certain things you cannot define. For instance, can you define love? I have not been able to. I don't know if anybody has been able to. Something you have to feel, experience.
With respect to being intelligent or a fool, can one be both in one incarnation?
Well, no, a fool can be intelligent also, gradually.
If you are intelligent, you are open.
Yes, that's right.
Can you become a fool through karma and difficulties? Or is it just a phase?
There's a saying, a fool is born every second or something like that.
I think the word fool is used more in Indian thought. Swamiji is always saying, you fool.
Yeah, but you see, their fool means you're foolish.
And with us it means something a little more insulting.
Yes, yes.
You are even in danger of hellfire.
Now that's the one thing that the Hindus and Buddhists never believe in.
Is the chosen ideal used in the path of discrimination?
Yes, chosen ideal. You see, through discrimination you meditate upon the chosen ideal. Your chosen ideal is the Atman. It's the God who is dwelling within.
But this is beyond conception.
Beyond conception, that's right. But you see, take for instance, your chosen ideal may be Christ. Now that Christ again is the Atman, God dwelling within. You see, for instance, you have the Father, Son, Holy Ghost. These three are not distinct. They are one. Which means Son, God, Christ, is one with Father and one with the Holy Ghost. The Holy Ghost is the Atman, God dwelling within. So that is our way of taking or worshipping an avatar, a divine incarnation. We do not consider the avatar merely as a historical person, because history has beginning, history has an end. You see the idea? But Christ is the eternal Christ, the eternal God coming as Christ, the eternal God coming as Krishna. You see? And that is, but you see, Christianity again, theologians point out the uniqueness of Christianity is its historicity. But that means it has a beginning, it has an end. It is not an eternal truth. And that is why, again, you see, Buddhists, for instance, accept Buddha, and Buddha was a historical person. But they say, that is not the important part of it. It's the Buddha, the principle, the eternal Buddha that came as Gautama Buddha.
But Shankara didn't accept a personal God, did he?
Oh, yes, yes. He had many praises and chants for Divine Mother, for Krishna, for Vishnu, for Shiva. Oh, many chants. He called it higher Brahman and lower Brahman. Or Saguna Brahman and Nirguna Brahman. Saguna means with attributes, Nirguna means without attributes. That is impersonal and personal. And in every Shankara's monastery you will find a jantra which represents Divine Mother. You see, a non-dualist can reconcile himself easily with dualism and qualified non-dualism. Because he sees they are all gradations. But a dualist, to him, non-dualism is a blasphemy. Yes. So it is from that non-dualistic standpoint that he can harmonize all religions, all faiths. You know, there is that saying of Sri Ramakrishna, when you, in the monument, you know, he gave that illustration. From when you are down below, you see men, cattle, horses, and women. I'm not classifying. You see the difference. But you go up into the monument, then you look at them, they all look alike.
Is an incarnation always an incarnation of Vishnu?
Not necessarily. It can be an incarnation of Divine Mother too.
But not of Shiva?
Yes, Shiva also. Shankara, for instance, Shankaracharya was considered an incarnation of Shiva. Our Swamiji was considered an incarnation of Shiva.
And Ramakrishna, an incarnation of Vishnu?
Vishnu and Holy Mother, Divine Mother. Don't you know when he passed away, Holy Mother said, "Oh Mother, why did you leave me alone?"
Does everyone reincarnate or just certain people?
Is everyone what?
Does everyone reincarnate or just certain people?
Yes, we all reincarnate, but divine incarnations again are different.
But everyone reincarnates.
Yes, until we attain knowledge. When we have the knowledge of Brahman, then we do not reincarnate.
And we only get that knowledge through experience?
Yes, knowledge of Brahman, the transcendental knowledge.
But we have to have that experience here.
Yes, yes.
Is the knowledge of Brahman the same as cosmic consciousness?
Well, it depends upon what you mean by cosmic consciousness. There was an ad, so-and-so will give a lecture on COMIC consciousness. S was missing. So it all depends upon what you mean by cosmic. Is it comic or what? You have to define your terms, you know. It's a fact, you know. It's a big ad, you know. So-and-so will give a lecture on comic consciousness. This was missing.
Isn't cosmic consciousness and the avatar the same thing?
I don't know what they mean by cosmic consciousness. It's cosmos. Is the universe. So what this cosmic consciousness, what somebody means, that's a word used by somebody. But what he exactly means, I don't know. Generally it is called transcendental consciousness. You see. But if they mean by cosmic consciousness, transcendental consciousness, then it is the same. But so, that's why I said, it all depends upon the meaning you put to the word cosmic.
A man wrote a book about it.
I know that. Yeah.
And it seemed that God was with him in that.
Yes, but you see, his selections were a little dubious. And so, you know, anybody can write books. But there are books and books about what you call cosmic consciousness, if it is that transcendental consciousness, one who has at least some glimpse only can write about it. You see, otherwise it is all opinion. It's not knowledge. One more question. No, you are not in a mood to ask. Eh?
Are there many different degrees of samadhi?
Yes, yes.
One can distinguish between them, I suppose.
Oh, yes, there are distinctions between them, yes. You know, if you read that Patanjali's Yoga Aphorisms, you will find there are 8 kinds, I believe. He explains 8 kinds. And I can't remember all the details. But again, mainly, we classify into 2 different classes, lower and higher. In the lower experience, you have still a sense of distinction of you left. That is, you are having the vision of God. In the highest, that you is merged in Brahman.
Swami, can I ask one more question?
Yes.
Shiva and Vishnu are aspects of Brahman, aren't they?
Right. One and the same.
Because
I'd not even say aspect. Each one represents the whole. Call it water or aqua or pani, it's the same substance, same reality. So that is my understanding. Shiva and Vishnu or Brahman and Christ or Krishna, I see no difference. The same God, same truth, expressed by different names.
So, where does Kali come in?
Oh, Kali is Mother. Divine Mother, Kali.
Is that
the Mother of the universe. Same as Brahman.
So, Brahman is the constructive force and Kali the destructive force?
No. Brahman is when there is no creation. But Brahman appears as Mother Kali when there is creation, preservation and destruction. You see, creation, preservation and destruction go together. You cannot have creation without destruction. For instance, the seed cannot grow if you try to keep the seed intact. You see? If you put it in a case, oh no, I must not have it destroyed. Can it grow? So the seed has to be destroyed to grow. So creation, preservation and destruction go together. And that is what is called mother power. And Brahman and Shakti are united. When Brahman and Shakti are inactive, then it is pure Brahman. When it becomes active, it's Mother Kali. Om Hari Om. Om Asato Ma Sadgamaya. tamaso ma jyotirgamaya mrittor ma amritangamaya abir abir maithi rudrajatte dakshinam mukam tenamang pahi nityam om. Lead us from the unreal to the real. Lead us from death to immortality. Lead us from darkness to light. Light us through and through, and guide us evermore with thy loving presence. Om Shanti, Shanti, Shanti. Peace, peace.